The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello, this is Mariana Cacciatore, and you're listening to Bread for the Journey Radio. We've got a special show today because I'm going to be in conversation with Mark Nepo. Mark is a poet, philosopher, author, and a dear friend to many people in the Bread for the Journey family. And I'll introduce you to him in a minute, but first I'd like to say a few things about Bread for the Journey. Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to find people who are passionate and excited about improving their community and help them make it happen. And this is a very practical kind of mission statement that's in service to our vision, which is actually quite expansive and deep. Our vision is to nurture the seed of generosity in every human heart. And so in a very practical way, what we do is find people who want to make a difference in their community by we create a group of people in cities all around the country, and we give them some very practical things. We give them nonprofit status with the IRS. We give them a template for articles and bylaws so they can incorporate as a nonprofit in their state. We give them a website so that they can get the word out about what they're doing, give them guidance on how to reach out to people in their community and raise a little bit of money from friends and family and colleagues in a really relationship kind of centered way, and then pool that money and find people in the community who are doing all kinds of things that make that community richer, that make it more healthy and just and more beautiful. And often we work with people who have no experience in nonprofit or with fundraising. They're just ordinary human beings who have come to a place in their life where they recognize that giving back is part of a life well lived. And so at the heart of what Bread for the Journey does, it kind of makes it unique, I believe, is that we're really focused on relationship. So we give micro grants, and when we hear about somebody in a community that is doing something that needs a little bit of financial support, what we do is invite them over for a cup of tea or for a meal, and we sit down person to person and have a conversation with them about what they're doing. And what happens there is that a relationship develops between Bread for the Journey and either a person or a group of people in a community who have an idea to make the community better. And that becomes the seed for nurturing what grows from that. And there are all kinds of things. Sometimes, of course, it's a, as I mentioned already, it's a grant, a micro grant. They can be anywhere from $250 to $1,500 or even $3,000, although most grants are usually in the $800 to $1,200 range, I think. But that is really just the beginning of a relationship. You know, there's a lot of encouragement that happens. There's a lot of getting to know who the people are, connections with other people in the community, both parties attending events that the other person is hosting. And little by little, there's a community that develops of people who are really committed to relationship, are committed to caring for one another, who are listening deeply to one another and giving what they can. They're doing what our vision statement really is all about, to nurture the seed of generosity in every human heart. And so why do we have a radio show? One of the times we came together with our board of directors, we really got very clear that one of the primary things we want to do is to spread the word about who we are and what we're doing. We've been around since 1988, and we've kind of been a quiet, sort of under-the-radar screen group, and that is beginning to change now. And you can learn more about Bread for the Journey. We've just completed a very big project, and that is we went from one website that talked about the International Central Headquarters and also talked about our 20 plus chapters around the country, all on one website. And we are in the midst of changing over to a much more expansive one, in which the international office itself has its own website at breadforthejourney.org. And each chapter will have its own individual website so that they can reach out to people in their community in this way that we're all communicating with one another now. And I just want to tell, before we begin the interview, I just want to tell one more story that helps, I think, you understand a bit about how Bread for the Journey is a little different. Our plan for launching this website was going to be November 9th, a week from now. And yesterday I received a call from one of our donors, Mark Schmelmerdin, whose wife, Susan Jeffers, had just died. And some of you who are listening may know Susan through her writing and speaking. She's the author of a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. She's written many things, but this is really her seminal work. And he told me that she had recently died, and that in her wishes, she asked that Bread for the Journey be named as a place where people can bring donations. And he wondered what we could do on our website to alert people coming to the site about this and how they might be able to move forward. Well, I didn't want, we have this beautiful new website that wasn't about to start for another week, and I just really didn't want to send all those people to the old website. We're too excited about this new endeavor. And so we, in the span of an afternoon, finished the work we needed to do. We recreated our homepage to show a beautiful photograph of Susan and a little statement about her life and passing, and completely shifted gears in honor of the relationship that we have had with Mark and Susan, who are very close friends with our founder, Wayne Muller. And so it's the way in which we honor these relationships that I think makes us unique and helps us stand out and deepens our relationship with all of life, I would say. So with that, it feels like a very beautiful way to segue into the conversation we're about to have today with Mark Nepo. I met Mark almost 15 years ago at a birthday party for Bread for the Journey's founder, Wayne Muller. And that year, Mark attended Bread for the Journey's first annual retreat. And for the next 11 years, he never missed one of them. And today, he serves as an advisory board member for us at Bread for the Journey. Mark has written 13 books. His most famous, well-known one is called The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have. It is one of Oprah's favorite books and the only one she gave away at her big holiday gift party in the final year of her show. And Mark has also appeared with Robin Roberts on Good Morning America. And today we're going to be talking about his latest book, which was just released October 9th, called 7,000 Ways to Listen, Staying Close to What is Sacred. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Ariane. It's wonderful to be here. And I so appreciate and I want to honor Susan Jeffers as well. I think I met her at, I'm sure, at one of the gatherings. But I just appreciate how you and Bread for the Journey honor so many aspects of life together.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, Mark. Yes. Susan did that book, that Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, was one of these books that it hit the marketplace at just the right time with just the right message. And so many people were so completely empowered by that. Like, oh, yeah, fear doesn't have to stop us. We can feel it and we can move on and do what we need to do. It's part of the experience of life. It was the perfect, for me anyway, it was the perfect message at the perfect time. And I think it was for millions of others. Yeah. So, Mark, in your promotional stuff for the book, you say this. I'd like to read something that I read that you'd written. It said, listening is the way we befriend the life we're given. Our friendship with everything larger than us opens us to the wisdom of Source. Our friendship with experience opens us to the wisdom of life on Earth. Our friendship with each other opens us to the wisdom of care. These eternal friendships are intertwined and inseparable. And I was wondering as I read this, what your thinking was behind choosing the word friendship for this.
Yeah, you could have said, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I think that, you know, I think more and more as I go on in years in my life, I'm 61 now, and that the heart of everything, the heart of the listening that we're asked to do and being here completely is about staying in relationship. You know, we have this amazing thing called the mind, and we have this consciousness, and it's a great gift if it serves the heart. You know, but it can also become a screen behind which we watch life and not enter it. So we can understand those relationships. We can understand everything larger than us. We can get insight and wisdom about our experience. We can even get understanding and insight about loved ones. But why I choose the word to say to befriend is I think we're being asked, the more that experience teaches me, is asking me to listen in a way that keeps me in relationship. Because, you know, let's just take the work, and yes, the book is framed around these three friendships. That, and the way that you would have a friendship with any individual, you would give attention, you would go when they need you, you would listen when they speak. So in the same kind of really embodied way, you know, I'm really inviting myself and others to really give to our friendships to life, and the reward for that. I mean, the reward for befriending everything larger than us is that we get to experience oneness. We don't just understand it; we experience it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of listening connects us to our aliveness. And that's really what everything is asking us, is to be as much alive as possible.
Yeah, I'm remembering back to your experience of having cancer and how that really woke you to the desire to be fully here and alive and in relationship with life.
So, yeah, very much so. You know, I think... And this is what, you know, we all, I mean, it's kind of a age-old saying, but the choice between love and fear, we face it every day. And in my cancer journey, you know, growing up and making my own way in the world as most of us, you know, I mean, and I think this is not probably atypical, but, you know, I used to joke when I was in my 20s that, you know, I could be hurt but never surprised. You know, that I had learned already at that young age, I could almost have eyes in the back of my head or in the back of my heart where I could sense or see things coming. And so I used to talk about it also as my catcher's mitt. You know, I had this sixth sense where I could feel whatever was coming at me because I had been surprised by unpredictable things and hurt. And this is life. We all experience this. But when I was in my 30s and I found myself near death and struggling for tomorrow and with cancer and still blessed to be here, it became very clear that I wasn't allowed to live. I didn't survive not to be touched. And this reflex, and this is very much in terms of feel the fear and do it anyway, this reflex of my catcher's mitt, of fending off unexpected hurts, had really taken over and was keeping me away from things that would touch me that were beautiful as well. So I had to learn to, and this is maybe one of the deepest ways at that time in my life I was asked to listen, how to put the mitt down and allow myself again to be touched directly by life.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the, you know, I'm reading your book now, and truly I haven't gotten very far because I'm really reading the book and finding my way through some of the reflective pauses and journal questions. And I'm finding that this book really has the potential to change my life if I honestly and earnestly engage with some of those questions at the end of each chapter. And so in this way, I'm engaging in a deeper way and in a friendship way with the experiences of my life. And I'm guessing that was really what you, and perhaps what every author intends for us to do.
Well, that makes me very happy. I because, you know, my hope was, and I do, and I appreciate your raising that, is, you know, my life of my teaching and the life of my writing and the life of my inquiry are all becoming more and more one. And so, you know, I've been very committed to offering these, I call them reflective pauses, but they're journal questions. They're table questions where you can discuss a question with a loved one or a group over coffee or dinner or in the living room or in the coffee shop, and made it meditations, all to say, let's not just talk about listening, let's practice it together. And, you know, one of the amazing paradoxes in life is that the things that matter most are universal, and everything that is universal is incredibly personal.
Right. It's so true.
Yeah, so we can't, you know, so if something, you know, speaks to you or me or to us, then we have to find where does that live in our particular life? And what's the next step? You know, it makes me, it reminds me, later in the book you'll come across, and this is a wonderful, because teachers are everywhere. I love most the anonymous teachers that come from life and ancient customs and stories. And so here is one that's in there that about next steps and listening that is just fabulous. And it,
Mark, yes. I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second because we're going to go to break,
okay,
and we're going to do this as soon as we come back. So those who are listening, please stay with us. Thank you so much.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. If you're a golf enthusiast and looking for some great golf properties in the desert Southwest, you'll want to make the Golf Realty Network your weekly stop. Hosted by Jane and Al Anderson, the Golf Realty Network is all about living where you play, on the golf side. You'll hear from the course pros and vendors, while the real estate side will bring you the top agents and brokers who know how to market or find your golf community home. Tune in to the Golf Realty Network, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety, and rebroadcast weekly on Voice America Sports.
Do you feel as if your life is just filled with random awkward moments? Believe me, you're not alone. Tune in every Friday for TAG, the Awkward Girl Guide, with your host, Ashley Iola. Ashley has learned to own her awkward, and she guides you how to do the same. It's awkward, but it can be a lot of fun, too. We'll talk about relationships, sports, food, health, family life, and social life. Each show hopes to make you a bit more in control of your awkward. Tune in to TAG, the Awkward Girl Guide, Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here today with Mark Nepo, author of the new book, 7,000 Ways to Listen, Staying Close to What is Sacred. And Mark was about to tell us a story, so I'll hand the microphone over to you, Mark.
Well, we were talking about next steps and listening to different teachers, and I love anonymous teachers from traditions and centuries ago, and especially ones that are still alive. So this is in the book later on, and I learned this from a friend, my friend David, who was doing some work in Brazil. And in the Portuguese custom, culture, language there, it's tradition that if I were to come to you with a problem or a pain or a loss or something that has really jarred my life, there is a custom of how people listen to each other. And the phrase that is used is "e daí," which means "and then." Yeah. So, and it's asked in three different ways. And if you're with someone to help them on their journey, you sit with them and let them explore this in three different ways. So the first is, and "e daí" means literally, "and from where you are." So I might have something I bring to you, and you say to me, "E daí?" But the first asking is in the largest possible frame. It's like, okay, this is true. So where is this in relation to not just your life, but to all of life, to your time on Earth right now? What is the big picture? And as I might explore that, then the next question would be, again repeated, would say, you would say to me, "E daí?" And then, and this time it is asked with, okay, I understand where you are. From where you are, where is the next closest place of solid ground? Okay, from where you are, this is real. Mm-hmm. You're going through it. Where's the next closest place of solid ground? And after I explore that, the third iteration of "e daí" is "e daí." Okay, and then what's your next step? I just love that. And it models not only a custom of how we are, how we are to are invited to listen to each other, mm-hmm. not to problem solve, not to lead, not to advise, but to questions are doorways. So if we ask a true question, then the person we're asking it has a chance to walk through that doorway and mm-hmm. listen for what life and their experience are saying. And then what I love about this custom is that as we do that, we get by listening this way to discover not only our largest context, but what in fact is our next step.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we're ready to actually look at that next step or feel, you know.
Well, this is one of the things about feel the fear and do it anyway. Is,
right.
Whether we're ready or not, the next step is the next step.
I guess that's true.
It doesn't mean the next step has to be taken. A next step could take months to take, actually, or a year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And our process of becoming aware of it is a very personal process of listening mm-hmm. without turning away, which doesn't mean forced listening.
Right. Yeah, so it brings me back to brings me back to these reflective pauses that you have throughout the book. Like, in a way, I'm reading the book and I'm in my head, and I'm in my heart as well. I know you, and some of the stories that you tell in the book are personal stories. But when I have to stop and really answer even one of those questions, I'm suddenly deeply into a place of witnessing my own life, wondering what I know about that question, wondering how I'm going to, if I were to sit and speak with another person, what would come out of my mouth? Because often I find that I hear myself say things I don't even know that I know when I'm engaging with somebody who is safe and who I trust and who's really a good listener. Things appear that, oh, yeah, I understand that. I know that. And then it's a different experience sometimes when I'm journal writing. Like if I really have enough spacious time to sit and be with words on paper, then, again, this layer that we kind of keep, I do anyway, because I'm leading, at this point, far too busy of a life.
Yeah.
I just keep right under the surface. It just, all it takes is this small invitation to bring it up, and suddenly I'm engaged in a deeper way with my life and the world around me.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that's, working that way. And I think for all of us, we don't know what we know until we say it, till we live it,
mm-hmm.
till we move into it. And this leads into the second part of the book is, that experience is our teacher,
mm-hmm.
like it or not, and we are asked to stay in conversation with our experience. Ralph Waldo Emerson had this wonderful quote, which basically says, it's in the book, but it basically says is that every question that anyone would put is already a solution in hieroglyphic in our experience, waiting for us to live it. We can't apprehend it until we live it.
Right.
So, and I believe that we each have our own language of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
We each are wise, but the part of being human is that we don't understand, we haven't learned the language of our wisdom yet. And with each experience met honestly and listened to, we learn another word in our own language of wisdom.
Yeah, I believe that to be very true. I've been talking a bit about these reflective pauses, and I don't mean to just stay on them, but I thought maybe I would read one of them to give
sure.
our listeners kind of an idea. I'm on page 73 of your book, Mark, and it says, a reflective pause, a meditation, and it begins with a statement from you. This is a meditation that leads to a journal question, based on when the pianist Michael Jones says, "We have two glorious tasks, to be a good steward of the gifts we are given and to wait upon that gift." So the meditation invites the reader to, number one, go to a favorite place in nature where being quiet and still lets you hear your deeper self. Breathe deeply and slow your mind open. Inhale and exhale, forgetting your long list of things to do. Breathe deeply and slow your heart open. Inhale and exhale, letting your gift show itself. And then the last step in the meditation, breathe deeply. Do not run from your gift. Do not ask anything of it. Simply welcome it. And like the Native Americans in Walla Walla, Washington, honor your gift by naming it twice. And then that leads us to the journal question, which is, later in the day, open a conversation with your gift by writing its name several times as a way to invoke its presence again. Wait for your gift to appear and ask of it, "How can I be a good steward of you? How can I bring you through me into the world?" And journal what comes. Do you want to speak a little bit about this reflective pause, Mark, and tell us?
Sure. You know, I think that, and this gets to the heart of how we are in the Western world. It's always been this struggle between will and surrender, between seeing ourselves as the container or versus something in a larger whole. And it's more acute in our age. But, you know, we are kind of taught, this impacts how I've come to shift how I understand creativity in writing and art. Because we are kind of taught that we are like little gods, you know, we play God, which is different than being of God. You know, we want to be godlike. We want to control, create, so that the idea that when I am creative, you know, that I'm creating something out of nothing. Out of that creative power, I am bringing something into existence that didn't, that never before exist. Mm-hmm. Well, that's only half the story. Because the fact is that we as human beings are living inlets. Everything larger than us is constantly moving into us and out of us. And certainly we contribute our uniqueness by how we express that, how we engage it. But I don't believe we're creating something out of nothing.
Right.
So our gifts, which are our gifts are what keep us closest to our aliveness. Okay? So it's wonderful you kind of were keyed on this one, because there's a lot that this opens up here. So we are keyed to our aliveness. There's a great quote by Mechthild, who was a medieval female mystic, who said something like, you know, fish do not drown in water, and birds do not fall from the sky. Each creature is, you know, in God's element, finds their own natural way. Well, it's pretty clear for birds and fish. For human beings, we have to find our natural element so that we can stay closest to it. And that which is most natural to us takes the shape in the world as our gifts. Mm-hmm. So really, when we say that we're looking to get close to our gift, we're trying to befriend and to stay in relationship with our own true nature. So now this opens up, and there's a chapter you'll get to in the book that's called The Call of the Soul. Well, you know, we've had a lot in our time, wonderful, wonderful conversation about the soul's calling. So I want to add to this the call of the soul. The soul's calling to me is the work we are called to do with our gifts, how we are asked right. to contribute in the world. This is the life of becoming. The call of the soul is the life of our being. The call of our soul wants nothing but for us to be as alive as possible. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it cares what we accomplish, or what we create, or whether we're, you know, dutiful, or it wants us to be alive. Now, these two things inform each other, obviously. So, you know, to get back to being with our gift is, can we get close to our true nature, which will let us glow, will let us be as alive as possible, and then, in our true nature, we will naturally, and this starts to move into the wonderful work of Bread for the Journey, we will naturally, like the sun, what is the sun? The sun emanates light and heat, and everything grows to it. When we are closest to our true nature, we are by nature generous.
Mm-hmm.
We emanate, we give, we are there for
right.
each other.
Right.
And like that, if I can be as true to myself as possible, then that natural aliveness, you will grow to me and I will grow to you.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
And the human garden will blossom. So let me offer two quick things here to finish this out. One is the beautiful, beautiful image from Mencius, who was like two generations down, was a Confucian philosopher, wonderful philosopher in his own right. And he said that human beings, by their very nature, are kind. Mm. And his image for this was water allowed to take its own course will always flow downhill and join other water. Mm-hmm. It can be manipulated to flow uphill, but left to its own nature, it will always go downhill and join other water. And he said, likewise, human beings can be manipulated by pain, by sorrow, by each other to be unkind, but left to their own nature, they will flow always into kindness and toward each other.
Oh, that is so beautiful.
Oh.
I love to get that quote from you for our website.
Sure.
Because it fits so beautifully. You're right. And you know the people that are connected to Bread for the Journey. And thank you for sharing that. We're going to take a break in a minute. And I'm hoping, Mark, that when you come back, maybe we can open our third segment with a poem that perhaps even a poem that you have in the book. And then perhaps unpack it a little bit. You can tell us why it was that you chose it for the book. All right. So for our listeners, please stay with us. We'll be back in just a short while. Thank you so much.
Find yourself tearing pictures of rooms out of magazines? Do you watch certain movies and TV programs because of the homes they show? Are Sundays reserved for open houses? Then you are a home dreamer, and someday you will build or renovate your dream home. Steve Klipp has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. His show, Winning the Dream Home Race, can be heard every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Let Steve Klipp help save you money and make you a winner.
Michelle Kors 6 Degrees is your connected consciousness. 6 Degrees is what comes around, goes around radio. Committed to delivering a fresh perspective on thought-provoking, investigative information that can change your life. 6 Degrees connects you to the social and emotional scene and is your trusted advisor from finance to romance, mainstream to metaphysical. It's a positive, upbeat look at life, love, and the pursuit of passion. Get connected Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
News, opinion, passion. Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
We're here and back with Bread for the Journey Radio. We're here today with Mark Nepo, author of the new book, 7,000 Ways to Listen, Staying Close to What is Sacred. We've been having a rich and interesting conversation, and I've asked Mark if he'd be willing to open this segment with a poem in the book and then perhaps talk a little bit about that poem, why he chose it for this book with all of us. So, Mark?
Yeah, this is in the actually the opening chapter, which is called Beyond Our Awareness, and it's a poem called The Appointment. What if, on the first sunny day on your way to work, a colorful bird sweeps in front of you down a street you've never heard of? You might pause and smile, a sweet beginning to your day. Or you might step into that street and realize there are many ways to work. You might sense the bird knows something you don't and wander after. You might hesitate when the bird turns down an alley, for now there is attention. Is what the bird knows worth being late? You might go another block or two thinking you can have it both ways, but soon you arrive at the edge of all your plans. The bird circles back for you, and you must decide which appointment you were born to keep.
Beautiful poem.
Well, thank you. So this opens up a range of listening that we're each invited into. Certainly, you know, there's nothing wrong with making plans or keeping appointments or being responsible in terms of being accountable for what we say we're going to do. And the other, the more original definition of responsible is being able to respond.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So now we are always, every day, every time we go out into the world, we are faced with being responsible, as in keeping our commitments, and being responsible as being able to respond to life in its unexpected majesty, because that's how we grow. And how we listen in our heart for how to what that conversation is. So here in this poem, okay, I might be on my way to work when a beautiful bird or a ray of light or a sudden street musician or a sudden call from a friend, either in need or in joy, says, you need to go down this street, which you didn't plan on, in order to follow your aliveness.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
Right.
There's no right or wrong.
Right.
These are not, one isn't bad and one isn't good. You know, if we go to extremes, you know, if we just follow everything, then we, in the extreme, become wild and irresponsible in the accountable way. If we stay dutiful and never lift our eyes or heart, then we're surviving and not thriving.
Right.
No one has ever known how to solve this. It's not something to be solved. It invites us to listen to life in a way that enriches us and those around us and owns both forms of responsibility. So in this poem, for instance, you know, if I pause and just listen to the bird but keep going, I'm given something for it. If I go down the street a little bit and then continue to work, I'm given something else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I actually don't go to work and follow the bird, well, I'm giving something else, indeed, something entirely different. All of those are wonderful things. One is not better than the other. One is not right and one is not wrong. So how do each of us, and this is a good example of something that's universal but also very personal, how do we set up enough structure in our lives that we can make our way? But the point isn't just to live out the structure.
Right.
Yeah, the point, just as, you know, I mean, this is interesting because, you know, the word trellis, which, is, you know, is a stand in a garden on which vines and flowers, it gives them strength. It gives them something to grow against until they're strong enough to grow on their own. Well, that's the root of the word rule. Rules and structure are originally thought of as trellises.
Right, to hold us until we can fully hold ourselves, right?
Yes, and then we need to let go of them. So what happens in our lives, and it's happened since the beginning of time, is the rules start running the show.
Right, right, right.
And then the flowers never blossom.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, listening to this, I see how much you're living and embodying it. And I remember in an earlier conversation we had when you told me that the book was coming out, you said something to me like you felt as though this book wrote you. Something close to that. I may not have it verbatim. But I'm wondering, perhaps, if we can shift a little bit and talk about the process that you went through in the writing of this book, Mark. I think many of our listeners might be curious about that.
Sure. Well, you know, and just to back up for a second about all of my books and work, you know, I've not one of the books I've written is the book I started out to write. And I think that, you know, inherent in that is a kind of listening that I've been called into in my life.
Sure, and it's the story that you're telling of this book, correct?
Yeah, I mean, so when I look back, there's a perfect sense. What, you know, I write, and I think most artists and writers, well, I don't know if they'll admit it or not, but I write because I need to learn. I think each book is an inquiry. I don't write because I have things to say or conclusions to put forth. So, you know, I wrote a book, as you know, on inner courage. That's because at that time in my life, I needed to learn how to be more courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how I started this book on listening 4 or 5 years ago, and I wasn't aware at the time that my hearing was beginning to break down. So I have significant hearing loss, and I have a hearing aid, which is absolutely fabulous. If anyone's listening who's resisting exploring a hearing aid, if you need it, don't. They're amazing, and I resisted. I don't know why. Probably not wanting to accept or listen to the next step that was I was being called to. But it's absolutely amazing. But okay, so here I was, not even realizing, and my hearing loss goes back to the chemo I had over 20 years ago. It was slowly deteriorating over time. So I was being asked to listen beyond with just my ears.
Mm-hmm.
I was being asked to get closer to life. And so yet again, And so I started, you know, exploring this, not realizing. And so there's some kind of, I think, and this is why I start the book with this chapter, there's some kind of intuition always at work. And intuition is how we learn about our inborn talents and gifts, how we return to what is inborn in us. So there's always a sense, at least in the way I understand life, that under our consciousness, under what we're awake to, there is a larger order that is always at work, that we, in the way that we listen, the way that we live, we're being asked to stay in touch with.
Right.
And there's a great kind of image for this. It's how, you know, we take it for granted, but it's quite miraculous that when we sleep, we don't stop breathing.
Mm.
We keep breathing
right.
even when we're asleep.
Right.
Well, in the same way, the spirit in us never stops breathing, even through the dream of our will. Even when we think we know what we want and we think we know where we're going and we're bumping into things and breaking things and demanding things and we're determined, like our lungs when we're asleep. And you know, this is remarkable because, you know, in the animal world, and I was astonished to discover this, but whales are voluntary breathers. These enormous, magnificent creatures never go completely asleep, because if they did, they would stop breathing. So the whale brain, by its nature, half of it sleeps while the other half keeps the whale alive.
Oh,
and then it takes turns. We are involuntary breathers, and it's kind of proof to, of the presence of spirit at work, even when we're not awake. So how do
we... So this larger order is always at work.
Yes.
And it's always speaking to us. That's what I find when you were talking earlier about, well, you could take this path, or you could follow the bird, or you could go to work, and nothing's right and nothing's wrong. What it made me think of at that moment was that this larger order is always going to present itself, no matter which choice we make. Its creativity is endless.
And you know, and what often awakes us. And let me say, too, and you know this from our long friendship and conversations, you know, I believe that being human, we will fall asleep. We will trip.
Right.
We will.
Of course.
This is the human journey.
Of course.
The idea is not to stay awake constantly. That's impossible. And this is where, you know, great love and great suffering always jar us
mm-hmm.
into... to renew that conversation with the larger order of life. And so the job, if you will, and this is really at the heart of the Taoist notion of the world, which I love, is that the world is to be experienced, not improved upon. Yeah, so that doesn't mean we can't help each other. That doesn't mean that with everything that happened with Hurricane Sandy, all the amazing generosity and gift that people are trying to rebuild, that's not what that means. But it means that we're here in our time on Earth to experience life and help each other and help make things here as best as we can while we're here. But we are not going to, and it's total... hubris and pride and arrogance to think that we are going to change the nature of life.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Taoist sense, the image is one of a fish finding and refinding the current and being taken by it in the water. That, you know, that's the proper use of will, to align ourselves with all the currents that are larger than us. So if that makes sense to us or to anyone who's listening, then that opens up a different kind of listening.
Which is really the complete premise and thesis of this book. We're coming to the end of our interview here. And, you know, I think, you know, as I said earlier, if you really don't just read this book, if you really... truly engage with it. 7,000 ways to listen has within it the tools that one needs to really make some changes and to pay attention and to respond to the life we're given in every moment. And I want to thank you so much for writing it, Mark, and especially for coming and being on the show today and sharing what you have to give, the gift that you've been given, with our listeners.
Oh, well, thank you. And you know, it's always a joy. And you know, the gift of you and Bread for the Journey is just an amazing, I think, example of this kind of listening. And I'm a Bread for the Journey groupie for life.
You are. And I love it. And I love it. And so for our listeners, if you'd like to go to our website, the address is breadforthejourney.org. And we hope you'll join us and participate in whatever way you like. And I will close, as I do with each show. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. See you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.